Welcome to Tango TV, everyone. I am your host, Tango, of course, and today we are joined by my co-interviewer, Alfonso, and our guest, Christus.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing? It's good to good
Thank
to find you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Very good, actually. I've been enjoying a nice evening with my family here.
And, this is actually quite an international call, to be honest, I think.
Yeah, actually, where are you from, Christus? Is it Sweden?
Yeah, I'm right now in Stockholm, Sweden, but I'm usually in Gothenburg, because that's where I live.
Right.
But right now I'm visiting my mother.
Fantastic. So this is a cross-globe call, to be sure.
Yeah, on the road.
Is that in Australia? And I think Tango's somewhere in the US, I'm not sure where.
Yeah, I'm West Coast, so we're all over the place.
Anyway, of course, we had Chorus on the program for the last interview, and we were trying to get you both on the same time. But now, in retrospect, now that I'm looking at it, I think there's just mountains of material to discuss independently of each other. I mean, and together on the program, there's almost certainly something that we'd miss. So I'm quite pleased to be able to have you on the program, just mano a mano. Well, and Tango's here as well, so that's
yeah. Originally, it was Cora's idea that me and him would do it alone.
Yeah.
But I didn't really feel that was a good idea, really.
Mm.
Because
well, I mean,
I really wanted someone to moderate, at least.
Sure.
Because I think it would have been hard for us to keep it focused on our own.
Yeah. I think it's good that we have just one person to interview, keep it more focused, so we're not all over the place. Mm-hmm. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. There's time to experiment in the future. I'm sure we'll be able to have you both on. It would be fun.
It would be fun to have a discussion about level design, similar to one with Pavera and Transman.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, perhaps one of the program Bs you can join in.
Yeah,
tentatively titled as such. Yeah.
Something like that. It would certainly be fun.
Tango TV is all about questionable titles. There's no vision involved in this program anyway, so we stuck with it. I don't know why. Anyway, Christus, before we get going proper, I just wanted to ask you something because what does mostly dog-like mean?
Mostly dog-like.
Yeah.
I'm not. Well, it's originally from a KMFDM song called Godlike, Doglike.
Yes. if you don't know it off the bat, then you're just completely at a loss. You don't know what it means.
And so I used to have that as my kind of title, Godlike, Doglike.
Yeah.
And then because as a bit of a jab at myself,
sure,
I added mostly dog-like.
Yeah, mostly dog-like, right. Okay. Yeah, I was just interested in the origins of that one in particular.
So that's basically where that came from.
And that's the end of that chapter.
it's not really much to talk about.
No, of course not. It was just an interesting aside. Just wanted to dig into it a little bit. But typically at the start of interviews, we do the most sensible thing. We start at the start. Although I'm looking back at your early works, it appears that the start for you was way, way back, 1997, 1998, perhaps before then. Did you first start modding and mapping for Doom, or was that the first game you started with?
No, actually not. I had an Atari ST first. Actually, I can go back even further than that, because when I first played board games when I was a kid in the 80s, I would dream of making my own games. So I started making my own versions of these board games that I had played back when I was like 10 years or something.
Right.
So it was not exactly massive differences. It was just basically one game where you're playing in Africa and you're looking for this diamond. And I made basically the same game, but I made it in India and a bit Indiana Jones inspired. And a bit of the Temple of the Doom and stuff like that.
Sweet.
I can't remember. and I played that with my siblings. Stuff like that, and then I made one inspired by when I started playing in the Nintendo. I didn't have one Nintendo, so which was probably why I got had so much time thinking about these things. when I dreamt about playing, my father didn't like games at all. So, yeah, especially computer games.
So how did you make the transition to computer games or Doom specifically?
Well, I started high school.
Yeah,
it's 7th to 9th grade in Sweden. Hmm. I'm not sure if it's similar in.
That makes sense to me. I'm not sure how it is in the US. But,
it's a little bit different here, but same idea.
Yeah, and then we had computers in school, so I started using these, and the most prolific were Atari ST. Mm-hmm. And I started making animations on this, and I made the first animation I did was pretty long, actually. It was about 5 minutes animation of a guy basically rampaging through Vietnam in this tank. And
I want to see that.
Oh, yeah.
You must dig that up for us. I want to really see that.
Eventually, I scrounged up enough money to buy my own Atari ST so I could work on it at home, but I don't actually know if I can still produce that video because my Atari ST is broken and
lost a lot of things
are probably broken as well.
Oh well, not cool.
But it was kind of fun. Basically a lot of gore and
high expense up. Yeah.
But eventually I started thinking again about making games, so I asked my teacher about making games, and he basically said, forget about it, you can't do it, it's too complicated. But then I started looking into a program called Adventure Maker, which was basically a precursor to game programs like Game Maker and stuff.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
So you have these games like Return to Zork or whatever, Doomsday's Redemption.
Sure.
And you could make games like that in that. Mm-hmm. So I tried to learn the programming and stuff, and basically I made some very shallow attempts, but I never really managed to understand the programming aspect of it enough to make something deep. Enough, so I couldn't figure out how to make things in the game, so I could pick up a key or something. So
at this point in the in your sort of
timeline,
in developing an interest in making games, and so were you just considering it as more of a hobby, or were you thinking maybe I could perhaps make a career out of this?
It was of course a pipe dream to make a career out of it.
Yes,
but right then I was like 12 or 13 years.
Hmm.
Let's see, 13 probably, because it was first year in high school, and 12, 13, yeah, something like that. So it wasn't really on my attention right then, because what I was doing was so basic still. I didn't even really... I could play games like platformers and stuff like that. I hadn't even seen Doom at this time, of course, because it hadn't come out yet.
Of course, yeah.
I dreamt about doing stuff like that, but I had no idea how to get there. But games like Stunts came around.
Which one's that, sorry?
Stunts, a car game from 91, I believe it was.
Stunts.
Huh. Yeah.
Stunts. Does that ring a bell, Tanger?
I have not heard of it, but that was before my time.
If you ever played Trackmania, it's basically Trackmania, but
possibly, yeah,
a lot more primitive. But it has the same. Trackmania in the fancy graphics and the stuff, but Stunts was basically the same thing,
right,
just 20 years ago.
Sure. Hmm. So I mean,
you can make your own maps and stuff in that, but then I started hacking the files to mix up the cars and get the Lamborghini to be actually perform well and stuff like that.
Fantastic. So really, by the time you eventually got around to doing it, you were pretty well versed in editing making games to some extent, I guess.
I certainly had the desire to do it. I had worked tried everything I could with everything I found, or if you could say that.
Yeah.
The interesting part was the first time I played Doom, I didn't actually understand it was real-time rendered, because I had never seen anything like that before. So I thought it was all hand-drawn, all these positions you could go in. It was kind of stupid, actually, when you think back on it. Okay. But I remember thinking, how did they have the energy to draw all this?
So did you get into Doom before Quake, or did Quake come first for you?
No, I got into Doom early 94. I think it was just a month or so after Doom came. Or maybe it was mid-94. I can't really quite remember. But it was when we got up these new PCs in school. The first thing people put on the computer was Doom. And and at first I only dreamt about making maps for it, because it wasn't really something you could do at the beginning. It was something that evolved. At first, people may manage to hack the files so they could replace the items in the map, but they couldn't figure out the BSP system.
This is quite a vivid account of the history of Doom in a way. I mean, we've heard people go into depth and recount this sort of experiences, but not quite like this. It's very interesting to hear about, really, sort of firsthand like that.
Well, it wasn't on the internet or anything, so I was very isolated in my world. I only had one friend who shared my passion for this great new game world that had all these possibilities. And he came to me and said, he had found this great thing called Doomed, which was by Jeff something or other. But basically, we started working with this Doomed and making maps. Eventually, we got a bit more programs, but we never got the really good programs, because we weren't online still. Me and my friend, we just had programs like DM Graph that let you replace graphics inside the iWAD directly, but you couldn't. We didn't have DeuTex or programs like that, so it was a bit messy. But we didn't know better, so we didn't care.
It's fascinating to think, actually, that I can't remember from who I got this story, but even today, I think when John Romero, one of his new girlfriends, he was trying to show her how to edit games for Doom, and she was using Doom Builder too, and which you think would be the most convenient, but then he came along and said, no, don't use that, it's too difficult to use. And then he sat her down on the next computer and taught her to use Doomed instead. So he's very dark in the world when it comes to that.
I suppose it could be because he could help her better with that. Because
it's possible. I think it's just John Romero being John Romero, though.
Because Doom Builder 2 certainly wouldn't be more difficult than Doomed for the next.
Sure. I think we may have a question from Chorus regarding one of your first projects for Doom.
Is that Hyena Killing Machine?
That will be
one.
It, yes.
That's the one? Okay, yeah.
That's the one I haven't played, yeah.
Chorus asks, could you talk a bit about the design process for Hyena Killing Machine? And neither myself nor Alfonso seem to know anything about this project, so you're going to have to give us
the run the gamut, yes.
Yeah.
Basically, that was what I started when I got started, and like with a lot of things, you start making stuff and then you just go back and redo stuff when you realize that the old stuff you did you don't like anymore. But Hyena was something I was making the years up before I got online, really. I got online in maybe, I started getting online a bit through school computers in 97, I think. And in 98, I got my own modem, so I could be online.
Total conversions were still all the rave back then, I guess. Are we sort of just jumping on board the bandwagon there and doing a total conversion? No,
honestly, I didn't really know what people were doing. I didn't even know people were still editing Doom after a couple of years. I figured people just had migrated to Quake.
Sure.
And so I started getting a bit wary with it. Because I figured, what's the deal? No one's going to bother anyway, because everyone's going to be playing Quake anyway. And I actually had a bit of a imagination that I would be able to sell it or something first.
Sweet.
But some crazy ideas like that. But I can't say it was a great lot of design philosophy behind it, because it was basically my first game. You could say it's actually... And a different game, because it is quite different from Doom in a way, when you look at compared to other total conversions.
Sure.
The only other projects I knew was Shovelware CDs, where everything was basically crap, and Aliens TC, which I never really got to run properly, because you always got the botched version where someone had screwed up the Doom, the hack and patch conversion.
Yeah.
And you basically had this buggy mess of a WAD that looked a bit amazing for its time, but wasn't actually playable.
But I guess you're probably quite happy to have made that in the long run, and you look back on it and sort of maybe with fun.
Oh yeah, it was. I think it's hard to look back on any other project with as much fondness as I look back at that one, because it was such a joyous time for making things like this. I didn't really care too much what other people would think about it.
Sure.
Not that I do that now, but I wasn't too concerned with quality.
Right. Was there a theme to the? I haven't played it another as Tango. What is actually the WAD itself? Is there a total conversion? I mean, it's called Hyena Killing Machine, which would be a clue to anyone there.
It's basically it's inspired by Rambo, I suppose.
Oh well.
This guy with a red bandana that owns through jungles and power plants and cities and stuff like that. It was a bit inspired by Duke Nukem 3D. And it got all new monsters and all new weapons, even though they are quite similar to Doom's weapons. They are all... all the sprites and all the textures.
It's something that I would really love to go back and have a look at, if only for the fact that it's your first. Yeah.
It's quite interesting to see as a bit of progression, I suppose.
Sure.
And for me, when I play it with my friend who was participating in building it with me, we of course get a lot of laughs from playing it. First, because we remember the old times when we used to be playing co-op, but also because we realize how silly some things are that we used to do.
So my memory on your mapping history, and even having done a bit of research, is a little bit hazy between what you did then and what you did up to Phobia, or at least the first iteration of Phobia, before you went on to do Phobia the Age. I gather you were participating in some mapping compilations in part, and I think Alien Vendetta happened. Was that before or after Phobia? What happened between those two?
It was after the first Phobia was released.
Okay.
but before the second one.
Okay, so perhaps we could talk about Phobia a little bit, because it's actually something I have to jog my memory on, because I had played it before a fairly long time ago. Then I went back to play it, and its sequel, and it struck me very at first as being extremely heavily inspired. So clearly you had something in mind when you were making that in particular.
Yeah, it was actually Mark Pollan, Fnatic.
Sure.
Who released this album called Limits, where he explored the limits he could reach. He explored the limits of what he could do with MIDI synthesizers or whatever it was. I didn't really understand the technology of it because it wasn't my field of expertise exactly. But I just loved this album, Limits, and how different it sounded from something else I ever heard. And I saw this world shape in my mind from it, and basically I made Phobia just from listening through this album over and over and over for about a month or two in 2002, I suppose.
Okay. Were there any Nietzsche quotes in Limits at all? Or was that just there at the start?
No, Nietzsche came later. It wasn't until The Age, which was less inspired by... it was more built on from the original Phobia, where I was still listening to a lot of Mark Pollan, but I listened to a lot more of different Mark Pollan music for that one. Like Return of the King and those albums. Nietzsche came in kind of late, actually. And I can't quite remember where I found the quote. But I just felt that it held so... it just worked so well with the world I was creating.
It does an excellent job of immersing the player.
I felt that it was a good way to introduce the player to what the kind of world it was going to face.
And honestly, when I played, I was both pleased and surprised at how well it proves the fact that you can really use Doom in order to really get almost any sort of atmosphere or impression that you want to have as a player, really, because, I mean, it Phobia of the Age and its original is a far cry from what Doom is in its the IWOD, and be playing at the original experience. And so being able to depart to having an experience like that is pretty telling, I think, of what can be done with the engine.
It's a shame with Phobia, though, because I feel that it's the project I feel I have the most regrets with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but it mostly relates to technical things, like insisting on staying with Legacy for the Age.
Yeah.
I considered changing to GZ Doom for it, because GZ Doom added 3D floors and stuff like that at the time, and I considered it, but I didn't do it, partially because I didn't want to learn another scripting system.
From what I understand, you had quite some... it sounds like you were very frustrated with Fraggle Script, judging by the text file for Phobia of the Age.
Yeah. There, if you look into the scripts, you're not going to find... you can... if you look through the scripts, you will find stuff like that just doesn't really make sense. The script. Like that. That you are forced to do because Fraggle Script was such a mess. Sometimes you actually had to make the script make... I remember one script I had to make it skip some levels because for some reason the script skipped levels when it read the script. So I had to make it like wait and do and make a new line just so it would read the line for it.
So it wasn't necessary that you thought Legacy was going to be the source port of the future.
No, it was just at the time I just really wanted to finish it more than probably make the best it could be at the time, because I wasn't really, really invested in Doom as much as I was invested in getting this thing I wanted complete.
Sure.
But, so it certainly would have been beneficial for it to be for GC Doom, but at the same time it probably would have looked a lot different if it had been for GC Doom, because it would have allowed me to do a lot of things that I ultimately steered away from because the complications it would impose on Legacy.
Well, honestly speaking, I think it's aged pretty well, to be honest, all things considered. Especially, you know, when I played it through just a couple of weeks back to refresh my memory. Mm-hmm. I think it held up pretty well. So, I mean, say for those, you know, finicky limitations, sorry, not limitations, technicalities. That's what I meant to say there. No, I think it held up pretty well, and I imagine you're otherwise fairly satisfied with it when you look back on it. Although, you went back, of course, to do The Age, I think, was it 2006, 2008?
I started 2004 and I finished it.
Oh wow! Okay, so was that born out of the fact that maybe you weren't entirely satisfied with it the first time around? You wanted to sort of
actually, the first I made, I felt so satisfied with it, I wanted to continue.
Mm-hmm.
So I started making a sequel, and a lot of the stuff that is in The Age actually was in the sequel. That I worked on in from 2001 to 2002.
Okay.
But I never finished. It basically ended up on a shelf because, the ship you visit in map 5, I think it is, or whatever.
Yep.
That I made that in 2002. I think, or 2000.
2002 was dedicated to the ship.
Yeah, not exactly, but, you know, it was from that area.
Sure, yeah.
And the big area where you have this crucifix bridge,
mm-hmm.
that was also from the old sessions I had with the project.
Sure. Tango, have you you've played through Phobia, haven't you, recently?
Not the original. I played through Phobia the Age.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was one that I dropped my memory about.
Familiar with it.
The Phobia map is in the Age, so you haven't missed anything, really.
Okay.
Great. I suspected as much. Anyway, so let me just jump a little bit forward, or actually more or less around the same timeline, I guess.
Probably.
Team Future is what I wanted to talk about. Yeah, great. So you were on board for Nimrod, I understand, but not for RTC, am I correct?
Well, I joined with Shavero. Me and Shavero wanted to make a Doom 3 project together.
Oh, wow.
So we started thinking about that, and then we decided to make it a Team Future project because Team Future had a good trademark. It was a good trademark to get people involved.
Sure.
And interested in the project.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Nimrod, I started making that as a side project in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was playing a lot of Skull Tag at the time, and I wanted something that actually used the qualities of Skull Tag that I found in a more sensible way.
Sure.
Because usually you had these runes and stuff in Skull Tag, and basically it was just slapped into the map and into the secret or something, and I wanted to make some maps that basically had those as...
That used the more intelligent...
Core.
Sort of
core... elements of the map,
sure.
of the gameplay. And I started making it, and I decided to use Nimrod as a base for this, because I always wanted to make more for Nimrod, but I just doesn't really happen, because at the core I would have to start over, basically, because the resources are getting older. And so Nimrod was about a 6 month project I did, where I played a lot with my friends and just tested things and got it released. Because it wasn't originally supposed to be a Team Future project, but then I asked Shaviro if I could use his RTC soldier as a skin.
Sure.
Yep. And then he said, okay, but then it has to be a Team Future project. Okay. Why not? So that's the way.
It's actually quite surprising to me. I thought Phobos for Doom 3 was conceived well after both of those projects. Or am I actually misremembering? Is it the fact that it was originally Team Future was assembled to be for Doom 3, but Phobos didn't specifically come about until afterwards?
RTC was already the thing. It was already released the first season. The first
hub, yeah.
Yeah.
Still waiting on the second one, by the way, but that's okay.
Yeah, you can keep waiting.
Keep waiting.
But in 2004, when Doom 3 was released, me and Shavir was kind of hyped for this engine with the real-time lighting and all that, and we decided to get on it quickly. And in October we started that, and that's when we decided. Team Future actually was an old name that was before Shaviro actually was even in the team.
Well,
it goes back to a mod called, what's it called? The RTC 3057 or whatever it's called. I can't remember. It's actually two mods originally, that one mod by Shaviro and one by Team Future. That were collapsed into one, because Shavir's mod was called TRTCC or something, and the other one was called something 3057 by this guy called Flynn or something, I can't remember.
Sure.
But they had some prolific mid people on it, like Boris made some maps for it, and Frederick made a gazillion textures, and they released basically a demo on one map.
Fantastic. And you know, it's again, I mean, I raised this point with Phobos, with Phobia, but again, it holds up really well, I think. The fact that people are still waiting for a second hub, whether or not they're going to get it or not, is a testament to the fact that, you know, it's still regarded very highly today.
You talk about RTC 3000 something.
Yeah. 3057, of course.
Yeah. 3057. And of course, they released some exceptional looking screenshots from it, so I can't blame people for looking forward to it, but I've heard Shavir talk about not being interested in working with the Doom engine anymore, and if he was to make the following sequel hubs, he would look into using some other engine or something.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. I mean, considering that, I'm surprised he stuck around or is still sticking around as long as he is for Phobos, because that's had a very turbulent history, I guess. And you were involved in it for some time, weren't you? But then you sort of ducked out at some point. Could you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I'll try to. Like you said, it was very turbulent. It was a lot of people coming and going.
Yeah.
And some people made bigger marks than some others.
Mm-hmm.
For one person, for instance, joined to make maps, and then he made some horrible looking maps that was basically no effort ever, and then he decided to leave before we could even fire him, And
decided to leave. Yeah, I was about to say.
Yeah. And he started a new his own mod, which was called Damus, and basically stole our story and even stole our website.
Wow. Damn, you had links to me. To it's, it sounds horrible. I'm slightly funny. You'll forgive me for laughing, of course.
No, it was. We found it kind of amusing because he didn't steal anything of value, really, because he just stole ideas and our website design, basically, though, and replaced the graphics with
it. Well, that's okay. His project has been lost to the sands of time. Although it's been flagged up now, I think, humorously.
And then they had this... but we had this texture artist who really caused a ruckus, and he was a classically trained artist. At the time, I hadn't had any classical training,
mm-hmm.
but I had since then in painting and sculpting and stuff like that.
Cool.
Not a lot. I mean, only 2 years, but. Still, but he basically decided that he was better than everyone else on the team at basically everything, even though
there's always one.
Yeah, and we had these massive arguments about everything from. It was, and I basically felt that I were the one that were left to take these arguments a lot of time.
Mm.
And it really wore on me because you don't make these things because you want to keep arguments about the art direction.
Sure.
You do it because you love to make games. You know?
Absolutely. And you know, thinking about certain team projects, It's often very helpful to have a bit of conflict. It actually breeds like creativity. I've discovered. But it doesn't sound like that was necessarily the case here. It sounds like this was very much the sort of destructive conflict that can really hamper the progress of the project.
I mean, me and Shaviro weren't exactly. We were co-leaders,
mm-hmm.
and I think we had a. Healthy amount of conflict between us in our ways to go about things.
Yep.
But with all the things that happened around other people in the team, like the artist, texture artist,
yep.
It just became problematic after a while.
Sure.
And I felt just like I was looking for a way out.
That's very unfortunate, really. I did read a post of yours on the forums that said that you were almost slightly pleased that you did duck out when you did, because you felt the project, from what you've observed, has been on the upswing since then.
Yeah, I think it's more got a better focus, a better direction than when everything was. There were so many different opinions on where it should go.
Mm-hmm.
And now it has more a clear direction.
Sure.
And they make great progress.
Great. When did it officially start? And
It started October 2004, so it's been quite a while.
Yeah, I know. It's a testament to the team and just quite amazing.
I'm quite impressed by the guys, especially Shaviro, who's been sticking around for. But also guys like Gex, who's been pretty much since the beginning on the team.
Well, I keep a fresh copy of Doom 3 installed on my computer, awaiting the day. It's got the icons just sitting there in the corner of my desktop now, winking at me slightly. I'm not going to play it until then. But I'm sure everyone's looking forward to it.
Trying it out as well, but
yeah.
I'm not sure if it will be my cup of tea, though. Because it's not exactly in the direction I would have taken it if it was my project to steer,
mm-hmm.
you know.
What direction would you have taken it in? Necessarily.
At the beginning, I was more in line with Shavir, but I think we started to find different interests in gaming.
Sure.
After a couple of years or something, and we started to take different paths, and I started to look more to games like Quake and how they do their gameplay, like a vertical. We're always talking about doing vertical gameplay, but I think the way Quake does it, especially Quake 3 in its multiplayer, is something that's inspiring me greatly these days. The way it has vertical gameplay that, like, basically no other game in the FPS scene that I've seen, anyway. You can juggle people on the rockets or the lightning gun. Or, yeah, it's hard to explain, really. You gotta see, gotta experience it for it yourself. And basically, it's what I'm trying to achieve with the Doombringer.
Yeah, I saw that in the. You were highlighting that sort of mode of movement and things in the small video that I saw for it. Paying attention to that. So, yeah, we'll get onto that a little bit later on. I'd like to pass through Heretic and Hexen first quickly, but actually before that,
sure, no rush.
Absolutely. Tango, what was the other question that we had? I'm not sure what it was relevant to.
From Chorus, you mean?
Yeah.
It was about Nimrod. Actually, he asked, Nimrod, Ixnay on the Ombre was a defining experience for me. How do you feel about the project looking back on it today?
Okay, yeah, I guess we could.
Yeah. It's certainly.
I think you might also, after that, maybe if you'd like to talk about Nimrod Project Doom, which came out a few years afterwards. But
sure.
Yeah, we'll go in order.
Yeah, sure. Nimrod certainly was. It started as a response to the Sourceport. The instigation of Sourceports,
sure.
Basically. We heard of this Sourceport Legacy, who had which offered much more players and looking up and down. And at the time, that was novel stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, looking up and down and jumping and stuff. You could make a lot more things. That, sure, you had that in Heretic and Hexen, but
jumping's the way of the future.
It excited me and my friend who had worked on Hyena together to start another project for Doom. And originally it wasn't supposed to look anything like it was eventually looking, as usual with me. It wasn't anything about cyborgs or anything. But I can't exactly remember when it switched from being that. But, yeah, I think it shows its age a bit. But, and I certainly would have considered going back to it on multiple occasions and maybe doing a reboot or doing a sequel or something.
Mm-hmm. Just out of interest, You had partook, I think that's the right past participle. I'll use it anyway. You partook in certain speed mapping compilations before this. Were they all deathmatch oriented?
No, I don't remember any one of them. Well, one of them were deathmatch oriented.
Oh, okay. Right. Just,
one by Nightmare.
It's interesting. Yeah, because I'm a little bit interested in new sort of.
I think.
You're participating in. I guess we use the term community projects now, but strictly speaking,
most of
what we've done today has been in community projects. And then you've done most of the work, or quite a lot of it, has been based in a team. Would you have any interest in like participating in community projects like of the sort that are going on today, prolific as they are?
I can count three community-ish projects I've been participating in. One is the 10 Sector project, which was...
Oh, wow, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I felt that was a novel approach to level design. So
you did map 11 or 12 or something? I can't remember.
17.
Completely wrong number. Okay. There we go.
Then I made the... Then we're approached by Gemini to help him with his map for Alien Vendetta.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, I made the green part, but mostly I didn't make that much for it, really, because he had only done some things, and I just slapped together some stuff, and it was a section.
So that's very modest. So
and then I made a part of a map for Petonia 2, I believe it was. Yeah, by Sam Woodman was originally. He was supposed to make a map for Nimrod, and I was supposed to make a map for his project, but then he got he never finished his map, and then he got stressed, and wanted me to submit my map as it was, so he could finish it. And I don't know. He never really worked things through properly, you know. Mm. He did things quickly, and if it wasn't quick, it was not done.
Sure.
Or something.
I guess part of the reasoning behind my asking the question as to whether or not you would be interested in participating in community projects today is because you always give me the impression as being a mapper who is really, really meticulous and really particular about the sort of things that he works on. And that seems to me to be sort of at odds with how prolific the Doom community is at the moment, with constantly pumping out material at a super fast rate, you know, coming up with community projects all the time. I don't know, maybe you feel it's difficult to sort of jump in and get in on the action there, or maybe you're just not interested.
I find it very hard to be interested, actually. In community projects, because most of the time they are based on a gimmick that doesn't interest me, because it only limits what you can do, like all these 10, 24 megawatts. I played some of them.
Yeah, it's real.
Basically, I play one map in them that I actually liked, and that was the one, I think it was by Russell.
Yeah, Null Space Junior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good map. The rest of them basically were.
The rest of them, that's 3 megawatts worth there. That's.
I haven't played all of them, of course.
Yeah,
so I can't say.
Sure.
So you felt that projects like that are a little bit too limiting, but you didn't feel that way about something like 10 Sector?
No, 10 Sector was something I felt. It was also a different time for me. Mm. You know, this was in 10 Sector was in 2000, and I was maybe not as tired from mapping in general back then.
Sure.
I was more intrigued, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I might have been intrigued to try a 1024 map as well.
Yep.
At that time, I'm not sure.
It's interesting for that, because. Many people that I've spoken to date have sort of looked at 10 Sector with a lot of fondness, and honestly, now that I think about it, it's when did it come out? Because it sounds like it's from a time when doing that sort of community project with that sort of gimmick was met with more excitement, I guess, than it is.
Yeah,
today.
It was in 2000. It came out. It was
there you go.
Month.
Yeah.
It was done during August or September in 2000, and the winner got a Voodoo 5 graphics card out of it.
Wow. Holy what? Seriously? That's astounding. That's really, really interesting, actually.
Unfortunately, I didn't win, but I saw potential in that approach to level design, because I was used to conserving sectors, because it was something you had to do when you mapped to a legacy at that time, because you had to conserve sectors using 3D floors, because otherwise the maps would run like shit. And it kind of intrigued me, because I didn't think it was a limit that would actually limit you in a truly meaningful way. Mm-hmm. It would limit you in what you could do, of course, with the map, but it made you have to think twice before you started the map and not just hammer away with the sectors. So you had to think about, okay, what do I need here, and not just how much can I cram into this
right. Tiny
space.
Absolutely. So it's a sort of limitation that breeds creativity, is the phrase that we often hear.
Yeah.
It really puts you in the zone, I guess. I mean, as opposed to something like One Monster, that mega one, which was hugely popular. I mean, the number of replies in that thread is, it begs belief, but I suppose you think that's the sort of limitation that doesn't really fancy, that you don't really approve of.
And if you look at the map 30, which was the winner map, you will see an exceptional map, and you would never believe, had you not thought it, already known it, that was a mere 10-sector map.
Wow.
Because that is absolutely fantastic. Actually, the last 5 maps or something are really something quite special. But the community project in general, I find it hard to get excited about other than that, because I'm not usually mapping. I'm using a term I don't like now, by the way, because I want to make maps. I usually map because I want to create an adventure.
Ah, it's an interesting distinction. I've never heard that sort of critique on the word. I've actually never heard anyone sort of take issue with the word, perfectly honest. But
well, I think you have the term level designer.
Yeah,
I'm designing a level. I'm designing a world, and I'm designing or something. But when I always felt that the term mapping kind of degrades the work you do.
Yeah,
it's like you slap stuff together and then you got a map. And
now that I think about it, that's actually a very important distinction to make, because when you say the words level design, you're implying all the things that you might expect to be contained within a level. You know, it's more indicating of the experience. Whether it's, you say, map, then it's more technical. It's more about talking about the lines that you put together, sort of thing.
That was something I wanted to bring up. Because it seems like a lot of the stuff you do, Chris, this isn't just mapping, or you're not making single maps, but you are making these adventures, and I see that you're very fond of that, and it's evident through all of your major Doom projects, like Phobia, and even like the Heretic and Hex and stuff that you're working on now.
Mm-hmm. It's true to say. And actually, now that we bring that up, let's talk about Heretic and Hex, because I mean that could be. We could discuss it for hours, really, Ian, but let's not. Let's just see what we can squeeze out of it. But Curse of Disparal, that's... I'm not sure how much credit you want to give yourself here, but I always regarded it, and I've spoken about it in the past in this way, in saying that it was sort of almost a sort of mini-revival of Heretic in a way. We saw quite a few projects come out after Curse of Disparal, and it did lift the bar, almost. For me personally, I think for most people.
I felt that I certainly saw more Heretic coming out after that. And I had people tell me that they had seen a different side of Heretic that I hadn't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were some mods that didn't make any flashes.
Yep.
Over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly because Heretic was so low-key.
Yeah.
No one paid attention to to it. But then we had... who was it? Was it other dude who made Hordes of Chaos?
Yeah, that was him.
Yeah. I even had him beta test for me and... a bit, and I certainly liked that he engaged the game, but I didn't think he engaged it in a way that I felt was giving the game credit.
Sure.
because he added all these extra stuff with the decorate, and like it, like the game wasn't enough.
Right. Yeah.
To make and I always felt that Heretic was an exceptional game under this veil of mediocre gameplay in the maps. The maps
the veil
were
of mediocrity. It's a good phrase. Yeah.
The maps themselves were really well designed visually, especially for its time.
Yep.
But like many people said, you never were vulnerable in Heretic. You always had a shitload of stuff, and you had also usually no way to use them in a meaningful fashion because the controls were not exactly fine-tuned to use all these things you were carrying around. So I wanted to explore that with Heretic and to see what I could, if I could make it into the game that I felt that it had the potential to be.
One of the things that struck me most about the game was as you just touched upon, when I went through the original IWOD, I was just inundated with countless power-ups, and everything was so simple, and it certainly was the case that I didn't need them. When I played Curse of Despairal, every power-up counted, and also the setup with the number of monsters and the way in which Heretic's monsters have an extremely low mass. I mean, all of these things contributed to the unique feeling of the game, And I think most importantly of all, for me at least, Curse of Despairal does a really good job of highlighting the differences between Heretic and Doom in a way that the original wasn't able to do.
Thank you. I felt that... well, that was what I was trying to achieve at least. And
right.
People often tell how Heretic got with these weak weapons and stuff. I always felt the weapons were really powerful because they have powerful sounds, they have powerful effects.
Mm-hmm.
The thing they don't do is kill monsters in one shot,
mm-hmm.
at least not the unpowered weapons.
Mm-hmm.
But I never considered that a problem because I don't want to necessarily kill them in one shot. I like to have the feeling that I'm have to pummel the monsters.
That's true. Actually, fighting through a horde of monsters in Heretic is a bit like running through a park kicking leaves. You just sort of you punch them out of the way and they fly everywhere, and then you have to go and collect the pieces and kill them all individually. It's a pretty crazy.
You feel like a total badass.
Also, I do like how the mace feels like a popcorn machine. I do approve of that. Not exactly powerful, but it's very fun to use, nonetheless.
Sounds cool.
With the items that Texan had, Heretic had, it made the game have that extra level of metagame.
Sure.
That the Doom just doesn't really have. I mean, after a while, you know everything about Doom. You can't do more with it. If I feel,
mm-hmm.
because it has those. You have these weapons. And those are the monsters, and you know how to deal with it. And it's just not. It doesn't really interest me anymore. To play that,
sure.
I find it sad because I really used to love playing Doom, but right now
I am. It's possible that I disagree with you on that point simply because I haven't played Doom enough. I mean, I have played it for a large portion of my life, of course, but
yeah,
I haven't mapped necessarily.
You two disagree.
Yeah, for a large portion of my life, but. I would probably say that it's gotten to the point where, I don't know, it's almost like going through phases of styles, almost like art does. you know, you art sort of has phases and fads, and you go through it. And it's almost like because we've reached the limitations or realized Doom to its maximum potential at this stage, at least for vanilla or limit removing projects. This isn't to speak about Zedium or anything like that. That it's suddenly become a question of, you know, what's popular right now, why vanilla was popular, for example, rather than, you know, pushing it out, the borders out further, in a way. So I sort of half agree and half disagree with that statement.
Well, I'm not sure I'm agreeing with myself either, really. I'm just putting out a theory that I hold right now, why I don't find Doom to be as engaging as I used to be feeling. It's possible that I will change my mind about it in the future when I find, because eventually I find, or on occasion I find a map that actually interests me again. Like, I enjoy playing Chorus stuff because I find his map style is very varied and very interesting, so you can be surprised there. And I remember when, I think it was, what's his name?
Who was it?
It's an old, oh crap, he got the name from Calvin and Hobbes.
I should be able to help you at this point, but,
he was part of all these old projects like Crusader, Darkening 2 and projects like that. And then he made a reappear a couple of years ago and be quite active.
Is this one of the Vanderkens or is this someone else?
Not Jan van der Werken, but the other guy.
I don't suppose you're talking about.
Lisa Manson,
talking about
on him. Well, I don't know. I should know.
For the love of me, remember the name right now.
Or perhaps I'll come back to you. That's fine.
I think it's related to Calvin's Tiger Hobbes. Hobbes Tiger or something like that.
He was involved with The Darkening 2?
Yeah. Not that Hobbes. Not the.
Okay, I was gonna say that Hobbes is not.
Not that Hobbes. some other.
It would have been Revelation.
And I can't, for the love of me, remember.
You'll remember. We've still got a ways to go in this interview yet, so it'll probably come back to you. You can blurt it out halfway through some other discussion.
But he made a map, and I found it very interesting.
So whoever you are. Chris appreciates your work. It was fantastic. We don't know who we're talking about, but good job.
I could look it up.
So, Curse of the Demon God is something you're working on at the moment. Is that just a natural extension of Curse of the Sparrow? Did you really want to work with Hexen, necessarily? Or were you just more interested in continuing the Curse of the Sparrow saga?
Well, I was mostly interested in working with Hexen, and it just felt natural to make a sequel to Curse of the Sparrow. As it was in a similar fashion that Hexen is a sequel to Heretic.
I guess certain people are anticipating, I know I'm certainly one of these people, after seeing what you've done with Curse of the Sparrow and sort of changing the gameplay so much for the better, and raising the bar, I guess, almost sort of like a pioneer of gameplay. Maybe you'll do something similar for Hexen. I'm kind of hoping that will be the case. Maybe you'll get to see some sort of style of gameplay that there wasn't necessarily in the original. Like, for example, is there going to be more focus on action and less focus on puzzle switching? Or are you maintaining the elements?
There's certainly a bit of a focus on puzzles. I think it would be unwise to make a Hexen mod without having a
that element in
delved
there.
Into that element of I certainly try to explore the gameplay possibilities of Hexen a lot more. I often take offense to people saying that Hexen only has 4 weapons because you have an inventory full of weapons.
That's true, yes.
And Hexen got these sort of finicky ways to work with them. Like, you can plays Gasparg Bomb, the Fletchet,
yep,
with the cleric, and then use
the repulsion. Disco repulsion. That's a very neat trick,
Yeah. I think, like I said, it has a lot of potential to be very interesting, you know. It just needs the maps.
It needs to be realized, I guess so. Yeah. And I guess it's almost the same problem as it is with Heretic. Where, you know, people might complain that there are, you know, only four weapons in Hexen, but that's probably because they weren't made to use the power-ups necessarily. So I'm sure in the right hands, when you're forced to use flechettes and repulsion discs and porkalings. Yeah.
Now, I've made a bit of a... Like I did with Nimrod, I made the first map rather difficult, and a lot of people really hated how difficult the map was, because you didn't have as much resources, and I had to kind of slog it through.
Mm-hmm.
You had to tread carefully, and... had to kill a couple of spiders, for instance, with only a pistol. And some really hated that. Sure, it might have been a bad idea.
Sounds like Daikatana. Killing frogs for the first map, that was a...
Yeah, but...
spectacular.
But what I'm doing with Curse 2, with that in mind, is that I got this map where you can basically run almost everywhere at the start of the map. And you have monsters everywhere just swarming you. So you got to cover your ass every bit of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're not careful, you will be shot in the ass. Or in the face. But you only have the starting weapon. So I'm trying to make a crash course for people to figure out that you actually have to use the items, because the map is littered with the different items, like fletchets and banishment devices and what have you. Now, if that works, I'm not sure, but...
it'll be fun to draw.
We'll see what happens.
Yep.
I sent it out to a couple of testers, but... I told them to play it on easy because they weren't veteran Hexen players, and I didn't expect them to have the experience with Hexen enough to attack the problem.
Right, yeah.
I expected them to play it like Doom, basically.
I can see how that could be an issue, yeah, sure. Not having the sort of playtesting base that's... perhaps quite on board with what you're intending to do with the game.
Well, I always have Chorus to go to.
Oh, he'll certainly be able to help. I mean, he's...
He's been great help. He tests and he sends demos, and I only wish I could be a good help to him as he has been to me, but he seems to be happy anyway, so...
Yeah, very good. I mean, of course, when I was talking to him about...
He has to make great demands.
I was talking to him about Strife, of course, in the interview with him.
Yeah.
I was trying to say, is it not... I think he conceded that it might be the case that, you know, the success of Curse of Dispel perhaps in part encouraged him to go on to make Absolute Order, which I love, by the way, and I think most people who've played it, but unfortunately, again, it's a case of Strife and just not having the coverage. And I guess some people wouldn't be willing to go out and purchase.
Yeah, but even if it had coverage, the order, Absolute Order, it would still be an exceptional project.
That's true.
It has everything you can actually want from a WOD like that. You know, it has... Sure, it would have been nice if he persisted to do what he first set out to do in creating this world and the story and all that.
Yep.
But it got the visuals, they got the gameplay.
That's right. He demonstrates an understanding of Strife. In the same way that you demonstrate an understanding of both Heretic and Hexen, sort of trying to push and discover to see what you could do with the with the item base and the monsters and the mechanics and that sort of thing. So they're very similar in that regard, and I basically do put them in the same caliber. Perhaps slightly biased.
He's an intelligent person, so he's got it very easy to take on those challenges of the meta aspect of things.
So, tell us a bit about Doombringer. Because I've seen the video, I've read up a little bit about it, I've seen some of the progress, at least in the threads, but I haven't done much more investigation, so perhaps you could sell it a little bit more. Is it just a personal project, or is it actually an indie game?
Well, it is an indie game in the way it's independent and it's a game.
Yeah.
It's based on the Dark Places engine.
Sure.
And the Xenotic version of it.
Yep, I'm familiar with that.
I've been kind of busy with everyday life, so it hasn't been something I've been working on every day exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm working on it off and on whenever I get the energy and time to do so.
So it's sort of a creative outlet for you. Whenever you have free time.
Yeah, I felt that Curse 2 was taking up too much of my time, or whatever. I felt that I needed something else, not something to offset what I was doing Curse with. So I started working on a project, and it actually started about a year ago when a friend of mine came and asked if I wanted to make a game with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he initially had in mind to make some kind of adventure game with using Adventure Game Creator or whatever it's called, RPG
Creator.
And I basically told him, sure, I'm interested if we make a real game, something interesting. Initially we started off writing up docs for this game called Cabal. No. Yeah, Cabal. Cabal. Oh,
Cabal with a K?
With the C.
The C. Okay.
But we weren't going to name it that because there was already another game called Cabal, apparently. So because yeah.
I thought you were going to pull a Mortal Kombat and sort of put the.
Oh yeah, we could have done that.
Shucks, see, opportunity missed.
So we were going to use the, what's it called, the UDK, Unreal Development Kit,
mm-hmm.
to make a Syndicate-inspired game, because Syndicate had just been released and it was pretty shit. I mean, it was a first-person shoot to begin with. But it was a bad first-person shooter, too, so
boot,
only made
things. As a bonus.
So I started working my way in models for the agents and stuff like that, then concept art, and he basically sat on his ass and said, oh, this looks great. And eventually I realized he was never going to start coding anything. I basically told him, yeah, you're not going to do anything, you know? No, I got... And he basically admitted that he felt it was too much work.
It was all bark and no bite.
Such
a shame.
So, but a couple of months later, I started looking at Rack.
Yes.
As a possible engine of using for making a game.
Of course, yeah, I had forgotten that. That was a base.
And what I did was I made a post on Doomworld where I was looking for programmers, basically, to get this Cabal game off ground with someone who actually were interested in coding and making it, because I felt that if I had a programmer, I could make that game fairly easily. Because a lot of the resources it wouldn't require as much resources as a first-person shooter would.
Mm-hmm.
But I also set up as a bit of a to in case some people were interested in participating but weren't interested in making some RTS game, I put up this Doombringer idea, which wasn't called Doombringer at the time. It was just the idea of this crazy FPS where you basically took ideas from the game of the multiplayer games like Quake 3. And try to make them gel in a single-player campaign.
So is the game still very much evolving in terms of ideas, things like that? Is it still, are you still in that part of the development process?
Certainly. Originally, Carnival, the reason I started with Rack was because I was interested in Rack. I suggested it, and Carnival jumped on to and said, I can help you. And, but he never really, I never felt he really did in any way that was truly meaningful for me.
Sure.
Which was why I switched to Xenotic in the end. Which was a shame, really, because the engine for Rack is quite nice, actually. But, to answer your question, the game is very much still evolving. What I have is a basic idea of what I want the world to look like. And it's, I'm not sure it's going to be everyone's cup of tea, but it's going to be a bit of a revert to the abstract days of games like Doom 2.
Oh, wow. Oh, cool. That's that interests me in particular, since I'm working Doom 2 the way I did at the moment.
I probably won't be able to make it as colorful, but I will try to make it certainly more colorful than your average game.
That's cool. It almost sounds to me like the counter Rack, because Rack's sort of level design, from what I've seen, has been criticized as being, you know, quite orthogonal and not particularly abstract and very sane.
Yeah. Well, they are abstract in that they don't look like anything.
yeah.
But, I mean, it's just corridor after corridor after corridor, but to Carnival's credit, he certainly seemed to have been making an effort to step
rushing
that
up his act. Yeah,
if you look at the latest screenshots in his thread, it looks like he's...
So I'm looking for it.
Yeah, he's changing things up finally.
That's cool.
The engine is really nice. It's a good engine to work with. It's got a lot of functionality for modders to work with. I'm not too crazy about the level design program, level editor, though.
Yeah.
I much rather prefer Doom Radiant over that.
Well,
or
really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The idea behind it is you make leaves in Rack, but there's no seamless way to make them. You can't like collect, hit a line and pull out a leaf from it like you can in a modeling program like Modo. You have to make each leaf for itself, where you copy and paste, and it's just I think it's kind of a slow task to work with, as well as you have to make every side of an object individually. While in Radiant you work with brushes, which are boxes basically, so you make every box and then you get all the sides from it, and instead you have to remove, in at least Quake 3, not in Doom 3, because in Doom 3 the compiling process deals with the extraneous details outside the world anyway. Sure. But
I think it did actually make a very, very simple map in Doom 3 once. Obviously, simple to the point of embarrassment. It was more me just sort of exploring the editor to see if I had the potential maybe to go on and do something with it. And the end result was no, Alfonso, you don't have the potential. You should stop this. Quit while you're still ahead.
Yeah, that's the problem with Doom 3 though, because you can't. Actually, anyone who goes into it will probably make their first room look like absolute garbage.
Thanks, it's true.
Because Doom 3 is not something you can work with easily.
Right.
Just off the bat. Because you have, like in Doom or in Quake, you have all these ways you can fidget with the textures and stuff and make it can work. But in Doom 3, you have to work with the textures very specifically, or they will not look good.
Right, absolutely. And I suppose the certain editors, I mean, at this day and age in particular, although, of course, Doom 3's Radiant was a decade ago now, it's almost required that you have some sort of experience. You sort of leapfrog your way towards using that editor, as opposed to something like Doom Builder, I guess, where you can just pick it up immediately and get to work. And,
oh, yeah. The great benefit of Doom Builder, of course, or, well, Doom, is that you make a square and you got a room. And every time you add detail to that, you still have the room. You don't have to look for holes in your construction.
Sounds like a nightmare to me.
Yeah, it can certainly become quite complicated when you start making the really large maps and stuff, and you might manage to make something that doesn't really work in the engine because it runs too slow or whatever reason, and you have to start moving things around, and it's not just, even if you move something around in Doom, you just move it away and it's still connected. If you move the vertices, and then you just add some more details in the in between, maybe, and it looks fine. But
so, right. This is a question that I wasn't initially going to ask, but throughout the course of this interview, I feel it's something that's increasingly been pressing on my mind. I imagine that if perhaps you're becoming slightly disillusioned with the mapping process, do you imagine being continuing to map, if not for id Tech, but doing level design in general, for much longer in the future, say past Doombringer, or do you imagine drawing a line at some point?
I don't think I can draw a line like that. Like say enough is enough, because I've already tried to do that, and I've always found something I wanted eventually, and then I will be back. Usually I start because I get an idea and I can't really shake it. And I get to the point where I start fiddling with it, and then suddenly I have a project on my hands, and a year or 2 years later I release it and I start another one, because it feels like it's my addiction. In a way, it's something I don't quite control. Mm-hmm. What I make is, I get an idea, like I said, and then I have to make it, because why not, or something. I can't stop thinking about it.
Sure. I would probably argue that it's a healthy addiction. Depending on the depth alcoholic. From which you go into it. Yeah.
It's certainly better than being an alcoholic. I can't say if I will stay with Doom, but you can't deny, of course, that Doom is very, very nice to work with in the way that it is so intuitive. You just slap stuff in, and
it's also to me at least. I mean, again, I haven't been editing for very long at all, but it's becoming an increasingly interesting case that it survived this long, and that it will apparently continue to survive for an indefinite span of time, at least as So
I don't think there's gonna be any end anytime soon, because there's still coming on in new people. I mean, the Chorus, for instance, as a great brilliant example, he came in 2005.
2005,
he started. And apparently he hadn't told me that he was dabbling in Half-Life before or something like that.
That's right,
first appearance was 2005 in Doom community, at least. And, you know, he wasn't very old then. It was like 14 years old or something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's always coming... Yeah, it's always coming in new people who I find it interesting. And unless there's becomes something that is as easy as Minecraft to build in, but got the versatility of Doom,
mm-hmm.
I don't think there's... And got the gameplay of Doom, of course, that makes people so interested in keep playing it. I don't think there's going to be anything that cancels
it down. Doom. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a product of its time, and it survives very well.
At the pace other old people leave, new people come in, and sure, people are. Keep saying that the Doom community is dying, but it's mostly people who don't know what to talk about. There's been people saying that for like 15 years now.
Sure enough. Well, you know what? I've dried up most discussions on my end. There are, of course, plenty more things that we could possibly talk about on a sort of wider scope and things that are perhaps less particular to you. This interview is currently staying at a pretty healthy length, I think. Tango, is there anything else on your end that you would like to discuss?
There was just one other thing. I know you mentioned recently that you've been playing Quake Zero, I think. Is that correct?
Quake Zero?
Yeah.
Well, Quake Zero...
Quake Live, whatever it is.
Quake Live, yeah. Quake Zero is the work name for Quake Live, but someone stole the domain before it could... So they just changed the name of the game instead. It's been a great inspiration for me since I started playing it. Initially, when I started playing Quake 3 in 2000, I didn't really like it because I suppose I was too smitten with Doom still, but I didn't really see the potential of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But since then, I realized that Quake Live. As a multiplayer game, Doom has a lot of potential as a single-player game, I feel. And it's still fun to play casually as Doom for me, as Deathmatch. But as a more competitive experience, Quake Live is
Quake
certainly...
Quake
smarts
it up, yeah.
Because you have much more precision there, and you can do so much more to... improve your game. It's not all about one or two skill sets. And sure, there's a great meta game to Doom that I've learned a lot from when I played some with Anders Johnson and
yep.
Ocelot. Not that I was any good against them. I mean, I got totally safe, but they shared some information with me, and I read some of the tutorials, and sure enough, there's a lot to be learned there. But I think the skill ceiling of Quake is a lot higher than it is in Doom concerning multiplayer dual type games.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I can see that. There's a lot more, just movement-wise, you have a lot more freedom, and there's a lot more of a focus on verticality.
There's that. There's the movement. Every weapon, well, most weapons, has its special ways to work. And sure, there's that in Doom as well, but I'd say not quite the same as in Quake still. And then there's also the matter of item control in Quake, where you can control the map and... even if the other guy got better aim than you, you can control the map and win by taking over that way, for instance.
Sure.
Right.
All right. Tango, I think, do we have a new website up for
yes, we do. Doomradio.org. If you would like to check it out.
That out.
Yes, I think currently it just has all of our interviews and Program V episodes so far documented. I have to learn how to use WordPress so I can actually assist in maintaining such a sign, because I'm IT illiterate, really. I can't, information technology me, nope, don't go well together. So I'll have to sort that out. I'm interested in maintaining this stuff.
Speaking of WordPress, page uses WordPress too. It's www.doglike.org.
Excellent. Yes, we should have given him the opportunity to plug that earlier. Brilliant stuff. Unless there's anything else from Tango or from yourself you'd like to discuss? Anything else?
Well, we had some topics we never actually touched on that we discussed on for earlier, but maybe we can get back to those at a later date because, as you said,
You never remember the name of that guy who participated in the Darkening episode 2, did you?
I wasn't sure if... I checked up the text file and I might have been mistaken that he was involved in Darkening. It might have been Darkening 1 or something, I don't know.
We'll probably have you back on the program, with or without chorus, however it goes. Anyway, it's been wonderful having you on the program. We've been waiting for quite some time. And,
thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah. It was fun.
Good. Tango can close it out.
Okay. Well, then I guess, Christus, maybe you can join Alfonso sometime on Program B. But otherwise, thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next time.